Also, so as a trend, we have all experienced real-time marketing in our personal lives in some form or the other. The most basic example, of course, is the airline industry. In the airline industry, we have known how ticket fares move up and down, and the industry has been using real-time pricing for a very long time now. And they've been successful in making sure that their profits go up primarily because of this one key element that they've implemented in their organization. Secondly, players like Amazon have been pioneers in real-time marketing. If we open our websites on any given day, the past information of our logins and past information of our searches is used by players like Amazon and Google to give us information on future products that we may use. What this means is that, however, the one thing that has to be said here is that these examples are just plainly based on one channel. What makes it very difficult for bankers to implement real-time marketing or to even work towards it is the fact that we talk to our customers across channels, across mail, internet, mobile, telephone, branches, to make it even more confusing. So all in all, this is a topic that is evolving very quickly. In order to address this problem, what the Asian banker did was to conduct a small survey in which we wanted to understand from all the bankers in the region, as we could talk to, if you are looking at real-time marketing, if you are considering real-time marketing as a way forward. So the question we asked a month and a half ago was, is real-time marketing the right time? And as you can see from the graph, it was split halfway. What we realized was that the question probably at the time was very naive. We were asking whether real time was the right time, not necessarily if banks were ready to do it, not necessarily if banks were doing it already. And there were a few more observations we received when we talked to a lot of bankers during this time. We heard that real time could actually distract you from talking to the customer and focusing your attention on them. Real time can actually be a good statistical tool, or it should actually be used, never use real time. Some banks said, what is important to know is whether the banks are ready to do it or not. And thirdly, what is important is it can actually generate a lot of value. And you'll hear from Donald and Vinod about it. So that's the crux of discussion we will have today. In essence, trying to talk about whether real time is the right time. For the banks who think that it's not, we'll try and talk about whether it is yes or no. For the respondents who think that real time is the right time, we'll talk about what next steps. We'll talk about are you ready to do it? And in order to do that discussion, as I mentioned, we have two panelists with us, Donald and Vinod. Donald, as you know, has been heading the analytics division at OCBC for a while, and according to us, OCBC has been a pioneer in using data to manage its customer database very well, and actually has been at the forefront of innovation. Vinod is a pioneer in this industry as well. He's been working for IBM for a while now, and he's implemented such projects across the world. And we would be very happy to hear from him on his thoughts as well. So without further ado, let me hand over the discussion to Donald. I'll let you give us a quick overview of what you think about this topic and how this works.
Yeah, thanks Arun, and thanks for saying that we're pioneers and visionaries in the world of analytics. I do like that. The first thing I'd like to start with is really a definition of what real-time marketing actually is to us at OCBC. Real-time marketing to us is all about making an offer to the customer while the customer is actually engaging with you. And that may be in the web, it may be in the branch, it may be in a contact center. But it's all about taking information you've learned while the customer is interacting with you and using that to enrich the offer and give them something based on their current circumstance. For us, it's not about just presenting an offer to the customer. You know, many of us have next best offers that we define on a weekly or a monthly basis for every customer. Real-time marketing to us is not just showing a next best offer. It's only when you've used the information you've captured during the current interaction to make that offer better that we think it's truly real-time. There's a lot of hype at the moment from the vendors, and you know, no disrespect to IBM and the likes, but there's a lot of hype. Every vendor that comes to see me these days is talking about real-time and how we need to do it. And I just thought I'd take a step back and say, well, why is that pressure coming out? Why is it such a hot topic at the moment? Really what we're seeing is there's a growing sophistication in analytical capabilities. I think a lot of the companies on this call probably now have the data in place, they have the platforms, they have the teams, and they can do quite sophisticated multi-channel outbound. Probably most of us are running hundreds of different marketing campaigns. We probably all have predictive models, event triggers, optimization. And really, once you've reached that stage, inbound and real-time is the obvious next evolution point. Certainly at OCBC, we've had daily data now for 9 years. We run about 1,400 different marketing campaigns on an annual basis. And for us, it was the only place we could go next. There's only so much outbound activity you can do before you have to look for something else, new channels and new opportunities to engage the customer. Another reason I think that real-time is getting so much good publicity is really the results that people are seeing. You know, if you look at the case studies from the likes of ING Direct and Spraalsburg in Holland, some of the response rates they're quoting are as high as 60%. And I think, you know, any marketer worth their salt can't afford to ignore the response rates like that, especially when traditional channels are in decline. In Singapore in particular, and globally, I think the third driver is really around regulation. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening now around the world to do with do not call registers. And in Singapore in Q4 of this year, we'll start to see our first iteration of that. And really that's allowing consumers to opt out of receiving proactive marketing communication from all organizations, which is really going to impact our ability to do outbound communications through direct mail, email, SMS, for example. So inbound is one way that at least we can still contact this segment of customers that doesn't allow us to contact through any other channels. So for us, those are really the three reasons why I think we're seeing a lot of moves in this area. With response rates like 60%, the question would be, well, if it's that good, if it generates those kind of returns, why have people not been doing it before? And for us, when I look back at OCBC, there were kind of three reasons that we haven't done it in the past. The first reason was cost. You know, just the cost of integrating your data warehouse and your customer profiles with the real-time data sources from the web, from contact center, from the branches, it was just prohibitive, certainly a few years ago. But now with all the channel adapters, the SOA architecture that we tend to have in place, it makes the data integration effort much, much cheaper. So we think it's now cost-effective, and I'm sure the IBM presentation will talk about that. The second reason that marketing typically hasn't done this is organizational. You know, when you do real-time marketing, you start interacting with people in the contact center agents. And typically, that's not been an area that analytics and marketing has been comfortable in getting into. You know, we have to start talking about topics such as the balance of sales and service. You know, how do we motivate agents to act on our leads? How do we incentivize them? And we've had so many other things to do, I think, in the past that we've maybe shied away from those difficult questions. But now it's getting to the point where, you know, the benefits are just are too good to ignore, and so we've had to push in and start looking at these areas. The third reason, certainly at OCBC, that we haven't done it is just the complexity of it, to be honest. As I said before, we do about 1,400 outbound campaigns a year, and then if you have to integrate these inbound campaigns as well and synchronize offers across channels in real time, then it gets very, very difficult. And so for us, that was the other reason that we stayed away from doing it for a long time, was we just had so much to do on the outbound. Again, it was a case of, okay, we'll deprioritize that. In terms of results, certainly there's some great case studies out there on real-time marketing from the likes of ING and the Dutch insurance industry. You know, IBM, SPSS, Epiphany, they've all got great case studies. At OCBC, we actually deployed our first iteration of real-time marketing last year. We deployed it in our in-branch processes. If you come to OCBC, which I encourage you all to do, and open a bank account, you'll actually see on a large screen in front of you the real-time offers happening. Because we display all the offers directly to the customer, you can see all the offers being made. So far, I think since we launched that system, we've opened about 300,000 bank accounts, and in every one of those account openings, we've made a cross-sell offer. We found that since we launched it, the number of products being taken by customers during account opening has gone up 10%, and we've seen that add-on features such as debit card and things have gone up by as much as 50 to 60%. And so we're actually getting some really, really good returns from our initial deployment of it. OCBC has published some videos on YouTube. Actually, if you go to YouTube and type in OCBC, you'll probably see some videos talking about our new account opening experience, and that will actually show you how we use the real-time cross-sell as well. So I'd encourage you to take a look at that. terms of where we're going, I'm sure you're all interested in what OCBC is going to do next. As I say, we started in the branch last year. We decided not to do all of the channels in real time at once, and so what we've done is we've phased it out. And so we started with the branch last year, and that's been a great success. We've got some good results. We're in the process right now of integrating our online channels and our mobile banking channels. And in Q4 this year, you will start to see the real-time offers happening there too. Rather than just having, you know, web pages with a nice pop-up or a banner at the side, you'll find that actually the way we've done it is very, very different, and we've embedded it within the whole financial management process. I can't say too much about it now, but when you see it in Q4, you'll see that it's very, very different from the traditional use of real-time marketing on the web, and something hopefully that you'll like and will impress you. The third channel we're looking at for the real-time is contact center, obviously. And actually at OCBC, we've decided to deprioritize that one. For us, real-time should only be done when you've earned the right to make an offer. And with us in our contact center at the moment, there's a lot of other things we need to fix first. You know, our service side isn't correct. We have to fix a lot of the servicing issues, you know, making sure that we actually satisfy the customer's servicing need before we even attempt to make the cross-sell offer. And so we've decided to focus first on fixing servicing, and then we'll move to cross-selling, which we think is probably at least another year away. That's all I've got, actually. Arun?
Yes, thanks, Donald. I like the way you ask people to open an account in OCBC right through the middle of the conversation.
Absolutely. That was a real-time cross-sell.
Absolutely. Thanks, Donald. So once again, I think you touched on a lot of important points here in terms of specifics of the reasons why OCBC took some time to come up, and when you're right now there, what you're doing and what you're looking forward to. So that's perfectly laid out. I think I'm sure we've received a lot of interesting points. I've noted some of them down to talk during the last 20 minutes of our discussion, when I'll pose questions from the audience and from me that I've prepared for both of you. So just a reminder to all the listeners that that if you have any questions to either Donald or Vinod, please type them into the chat box that you can see on your screen and send it over to me. Right during the last 15-20 minutes of the session, I will pose those questions to these panelists, and then yeah, you can get your answers from there. Now, without further ado, let me quickly introduce Vinod. As I said, Vinod has been with the IBM for a while. He will talk to us more from, of course, from the technology vendor's point of view, but what he brings to us, brings to the table for us is a plethora of case studies in terms of having seen the success of these initiatives across Asia Pacific and across globally. So, Vinod, if you can hear me, we'll put up your slides. Can you hear me, Vinod?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Vinod, the floor is yours. We'll put up your slides now. Yeah,
thanks. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for joining. I think, can we go to the next slide?
Yeah.
Okay. I think from a real-time marketing perspective, the way I want to approach this session is, while we focus on banking, how it's actually transforming the landscape across industries, right? So one of the key reasons why I just want to put this across is because every industry has its plateau, and they always try to look for new revenue lines. When somebody is building a real-time capability within an organization, it does not necessarily relate to only the products that they would want to sell. It can actually be extended to other lines of industry. Just to give an example that we have seen in the region, we have seen telecom companies actually using real-time marketing to actually sell financial products. For an example, telecom companies use location-based data to check where exactly you are. For example, if you are in an airport, say if they try to send you a message trying to sell you a travel insurance and then link it back to the financial service provider. So if you're traveling and let's say if you're one of the locations where you're gone for golf, and they actually send an insurance for the equipment and link it back to their, you know, the back-end financial service provider. So when we talk about real-time marketing, it's across industry prevalent, and banking, telecom, and the other sets of industries are leading the pack in terms of how it brings in a business differentiation. One of the key things, if you go through the slide, there are two key things that we have seen in the industry again when it comes to real-time marketing. Where does it actually create a differentiation for an organization? It's very important, right? So it's not that I want to go real-time and I think it's cool and I get into it. There are two key dimensions that we have seen that has impacted, which has been validated by a lot of other analysts. One of the key things is the capability to, first of all, create an insight which can be used in real-time. It need not necessarily mean I have to do real-time analytics, but at least get the right data when you're actually trying to get the real-time analytics, real-time marketing done. And the second part is the process flexibility. If you can actually match the process flexibility to your capability to take the data and deliver in terms of your channels, that's when it actually starts creating a differentiation in the organization. So it could be any channel, as Don was saying, that they started off with a couple of channels. So depending upon your process flexibility in the channel and your capability to use your insight in the channel, that's what defines really how real-time marketing will work for you. So that's one of the key things that we always need to keep in mind, over and beyond the use cases that we can actually think of, right? So that's one of the key learnings that we have learned across customers in the region. So I just want to state again, when I'm saying across customers in the region, some of these are very common to a lot of lines of industries. They face a similar kind of problems and channels that they deal with. So it's a key trend. So one, your process should be flexible in order to accommodate the real-time scenarios within those channels. And second, you should be able to deliver the insight. So there's a key thing that you need to keep in mind before you go forward in this journey. Second slide, Arun. The next slide. Okay, from simplified view, right? I don't have any technology charts, right? I'm not going to talk about any specific product or a product stack. So if you actually see that slide, there are only three key criterias, right? Of a traditional marketing, if you see the three pillars, the traditional marketing, when we talk about outbound campaigns, event-based campaigns, what you're essentially talking about is who you are, right? Who you are in terms as a customer that you're dealing with. So it's actually dealing with a point where you're looking at your customer and saying, what is the profile of a customer? So if I know who you are, then I'm actually going to get back to you with a specific offer, age group, demographics. Based on that, we come up with an offer. That's one pillar that you need in order to go down that path for sure, which means you need that information. The second one, critical in real time, is essentially what you're doing, right, from a customer perspective, what exactly is doing at this point in time. One of the key things in real time is being contextual, right? So you can really be intelligent in coming up with an offer to stream in a call center if the customer has actually called for complaining. Then you need to basically suppress the offer, or in real time you should be able to change the offer to address the particular transaction that's happening. So the key differentiation here, right? So I'll just clarify that. You can create an offer, you can actually stream it real time in a channel, but if you're not able to change that offer depending upon that interaction that is happening in real time in a call center, right, then that offer loses its value. So it's very important to know exactly what the customer is doing, which means being real-time means you're actually tracking every single touch point within the call flow in a call center and trying to understand what that call is all about before you give an offer. That is the second pillar that you need to really build. And the third one is the best offer. So we have touched upon this in the call a couple of times before. Best offer could range across, let's say, the products that the customer holds. It involves both what you're doing and who you are as a customer when you're dealing with it. But one of the key things, again, that we have seen across the industry and also in banking is that the heavy focus on actually optimizing offers. At any point in time, if you have 10 offers, so what is the offer that I need to go? You probably have your own models. Most of you would be building your scores every month. Most of you would be normalizing your scores. You would be indexing. You would have a next best offer typically that exists, which could be the best offer. But the point here is that, as I said as in the example in a call center, if the customer is actually called to complain and he's charging, he he's really, you know, irritated about the charge. And if he's your most profitable customer and in band one, then I should empower the call center agent to actually waive off then and there, which means that offer needs to be streamed so that he actually gets the offer of saying, I'm waiving off this particular charge for you in real time. That's how an offer should be. So overall, from a technology perspective, any technology that you choose, right, has to address these three pillars. So it should be able to get a view on who the customer is, which is what is who you are. It should be able to actually track what's the transaction that is happening at that point in time in your channel, which is what the customer is doing, what you're doing, and then should be able to, in real time, come up with an offer, which is a combination of a who you are and what you're doing. So that's all you need to look for, right, in any kind of platform that you want to go after. So this, I would leave with you. It's very simplified, but this is a key principles in which that you would need to follow if you're going down this path, right, from a selection of a platform perspective, just to give an input. Next slide, Arun. Here, we actually run a lot of surveys across, you know, every year. So we ran a CEO survey, we ran a CMO survey, we ran a very big CMO survey last year. We actually interviewed almost more than 1,700 CMOs. We went into the metrics of each of the, you know, organizations of what they are doing within marketing. The graph is very simple to read. So if you look at the top quartile, essentially what you are seeing is that the organizations which are leading the pack, right, and the one behind. So the key theme across, right, for each of it, if you see, is about, am I actually integrating the offer and my particular messaging to the customer across my channels and my value chain as an organization. So one-to-one is something that people have done. If you see on the first row of the, you know, the graph. Next one is, am I serving the marketing messages during a purchase? When he's actually trying to buy, am I able to react? And the next one is, am I servicing the marketing messages as a service? One of the key things that we have seen, at least on a couple of other allied industries, is that real-time actually makes a difference. You know, it need not necessarily always be sales-oriented. It has made a lot of difference for a lot of other industries in terms of how they service their customers and how they empower actually their employees. So when they actually look at an investment on a real-time, you know, marketing kind of a platform, there are two kinds of business case that we build. One, which is focused towards how you improve your wallet, which is one part of it with your wallet share from a customer perspective. The second is, how does it impact the, you know, the day in the life of an RM who sits in the bank, right, or day in the life of an agent who sits in any other retail store. Does it make a difference in his life, right? What would be the kind of scenarios that would help to make a difference in his life? These are two ways in which we have at least approached with the clients, and it's not always necessarily needs to be, you know, focused towards a customer trying to sell him or upsell or cross-sell. So takeaway from this chart that I would like you to have is that it need not necessarily be always about cross-selling and upselling and about how do I get this message to a customer. It could also have a huge impact on how your internal staff in your channels actually react and how their productivity can be improved. So both these factors should be taken in place. So that's all I had to share, and these information that you see there in terms of numbers or OCBC is in the top quartile, right? One more appreciation on that, right? So for everyone to know. So this is what I had. So any questions regarding anything on a platform, I'll probably take it up once we open the floor.
Thanks, Vinod. That was short and precise. I think it gives a lot of information on this, as you mentioned, the key pillars that drive this concept. Now, I think, as I mentioned, now over the next 20 minutes or so, we'll have a quick panel discussion. If any of you have questions, please type them in, and I'll ask the panelists. So, from the point now, having heard both of you, my first question to the both of you is: if we take a step back and we ask this very basic questions, are customers actually looking for this? Are they expecting banks to be doing real-time marketing and real-time offers? What do you have to say about that? Donald?
Are customers expecting it? I think we're so used to seeing it on the web, seeing it on Amazon, seeing it on eBay, seeing it on Facebook, that we almost take it for granted now that it's going to happen. I don't think the customer's sitting there saying, oh, I'm going to log into the OCBC website today and I hope I see a really good cross-sell message. But they expect relevant communication when they log on to these places. I think in the old days of us pre-staging leads and calculating things based on your behavior from 2 months ago and showing you that, doesn't cut it anymore. Because those messages are not relevant to what you're doing right now. So I think a customer expects that if he's going to see a message, then it's going to be a relevant message based on his behavior. So I think it's an expectation in their mind.
Okay. All right. Vinod, anything you want to add on that?
I mean, actually, Don summarized it, but my key point would be around relevance. So if you don't have anything relevant for me, please don't show it, right? Please don't bother me, even if it is going to be real time. Don't force it down me, right? So that's the key thing. So that's very important for us to take a look at it from a perspective of, do I really have an value proposition or offer which is relevant to him? If it is not there, please don't bother them. So don't try to do your standard cross-sell and upsell and bother them, you know, during that real-time interaction. It will not really help, you know, to the cause.
Okay. So having said that, record straight. Let's say yes, the customers, of course, as you said, people are expecting a lot more, and it's become commonplace for other industries to do. Now, a lot of banks are trying, some of them are not yet. Donald, actually, this question to you: is there a first mover advantage for being the first in the market to be doing something of this sort?
So again,
my follow-up question to this would have been: are banks ready? In which case, we then talk about what specific elements do we need to look at to make sure that my bank is ready, for example, to plunge in. So, is there a first mover advantage?
I'm not sure if there is a first mover advantage in Singapore, potentially, because so many of the customers here are so promiscuous. You know, effectively all of the banking customers have relationships with all of the major banks. So my customer is UOB's customer, which is DBS's customer. So if I can make a relevant offer to the customer and I can get a deeper share of their wallet, then that's a share that my competitors can't take. So potentially there is some competitive advantage of being first. But ultimately I would expect everyone to go down this route and we'll be back on a level playing field again. But if I can grab some share now, then fantastic.
So again, the same question. We have a lot of listeners from markets like India, Indonesia, China, who are in a stage where they have a lot to chew than they, you know, already in terms of getting their databases right, getting their customer information right, or even, for example, getting. And these are high. Some of these are high margin countries, where there's a huge pile of customers to go after. Anyways, now in those scenarios, is there a first mover advantage? Once again, what would you think? Again, Vinod, you may also answer this question.
Let me actually address it in two ways. If you go down that path and if you're making it relevant to your customers, yes, there is a certain advantage that you will enjoy for a period of time before others catch up. But if you use that capability to differentiate, right, from a perspective of a business model, one of the examples that I gave to you, right, for example, a telecom service provider who actually uses real-time data to sell financial product. Unfortunately, I have not seen use cases that are as, innovative from the banking side, but Don can add. But, that's a differentiation, right, from a customer point of view, because you're really trying to give me something which is relevant, and it actually changes the way the market looks at how I use this capability. Unfortunately, I have not seen anything on the banking side. Don can actually add to that. But I think in that way, you do have a first mover advantage of how you structure your products and sell to customers.
Donald.
I'd add to that, Vinod. I would agree with you. I haven't seen a case study in banking that really does it in the same way that the telcos do. In banking, it always tends to be incrementalism, you know, deepening cross-sell, increasing customer engagement, but it's never really a differentiated value proposition or a new business model. And there's potential there, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Donald, I have a question from one of our listeners saying that, can you share a successful feature of real-time marketing that you've implemented? Any case in points would help.
Well, really our success has been around, we focus on a very specific customer interaction. For OCBC, our first deployment is in the branch, and we've specifically focused on account opening. Account opening for us is really the primary source of new customers. You know, 85% of OCBC's customers come to the bank through the opening of a simple deposit account. And we all know that the first 90 days of someone opening the relationship is a critical moment in the customer's banking life. I think something like 70% of the cross-sell, the lifetime cross-sell, happens in those first 90 days. So if you can give the customer a great first experience, then that hopefully earns you the right to sell and get more of their wallet. So at OCBC, we've invested very, very heavily in that interaction. We did a very significant project last year called Rome, Relationship Opening Made Easy, where we fundamentally redesigned the whole relationship opening process. And we have something that's, we would say, globally unique. And again, go check YouTube. You'll see the videos and see how it's different. And so what we've done is we've realized this is a critical moment. We give the customer a great account opening experience. And then we use that. We capture data during that account opening. We link it to our real-time cross-sell engine to figure out, okay, we've given them a good experience. We think we've got the right to sell and get more business out of them. And so we use smart analytics at that point to try and deepen the relationship. And so we look at what are they buying today, who are they, what's their life stage, what existing products do they have with the bank, what are their behaviors, and in real time do scoring to figure out of the range of solutions we have available, what's the best thing to try and offer to this customer. And certainly our experience has been very, very good. I'm not going to tell you the exact numbers, but the number of products that a customer takes now has gone up more than 10% since we launched that system. So it's generating really good returns for us. And it's not just cross-selling other products, but it's cross-selling services, things like internet banking, you know, salary gyros, debit cards, add-on features that are traditionally not really activated during account opening. We use the real-time cross-sell engine to recommend those also. And we've seen some of those go up maybe 50, 60%. So we're seeing some really good results there.
Thanks, Donald. I think that really does help a specific case to help talk about it. Now, again, taking the discussion a bit further, in terms of when do banks know when they're ready to go to real-time? Is it any time? Or what do you think are the checklist items? We know you've seen implementations, of course, across the region, mature markets, emerging markets. What do you think about that? When does a bank know that I'm ready to do real-time marketing?
Actually, it's a tough question.
What factors can you consider? Donald, if you want to pitch in, factors do you think?
Let me take a stab, then Don, yeah, the practitioner, he can actually, validate me, right, my statements. I think if you've not got your basics right from a marketing perspective, then you're not actually ready. When I say basics right, what I mean is you have built the capability to come up with the back-end capability to analyze data, come up with the right offer to a customer. You are able to align your offer to what the customer's product holding, product relationship is. And how do I get my creative side of the marketing aligned to these channels? In overall marketing ecosystem, in terms of getting my product, channel, offer, everything aligned to the customer. And when I got that right, then probably is a time when you should actually start looking at real time. So that's my point of view. So if you're not really strong on that, then you're going to have only pockets of success, right? You're not going to have a sustainable success. So that's my point of view. I will let Don take it.
Don?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd say it's all about getting the value chain aligned first. That's really where your big benefits are going to come from analytics. You know, it's getting the data architecture in place. You know, ideally having daily data. It's having the ability to do multi-channel campaigns. Once you've got a significant volume of multi-channel campaigns, you can start optimizing those campaigns to make sure you're getting the best possible returns for your limited channel capacity. For me, though, there comes a point where you've got so many outbound campaigns that eventually almost tops out because you're going to start fatiguing the customer if you add any more communications. And so for us, it was really, there was only so much more communication we could do through those channels that made us think we have to look for new avenues and new opportunities. I think the other factors you should be looking at are, what are your inbound volumes? You know, if your contact center is only getting 5,000 calls a year, well, there's no point in having a real-time cross-sell capability there. But I would imagine that most banks were in the millions. And so when you're looking at those kind of volumes, you have to start thinking, well, what's the opportunity? And that's really where the business case is going to come from. So you have to have sufficient channel volumes and channels that are sophisticated enough to be able to take real-time messages. You know, are the staff able to do it? Are they motivated to do it? Do they have the systems there to allow them to actually fulfill these offers and give the customers what they want? I think the third thing you should be looking at is really regulation. You know, if the regulators are introducing do not call lists, then at some point you're going to have to look at real time, because it's going to be the only way that you can target maybe 10 or 20% of the population. And so for us, that was another big driver. And I think it would be in a lot of the countries in Asia in the coming years.
Donald, you also mentioned earlier about the concept of aligning incentives to the whole process. Can you speak a little bit more about that? And also, I just want to request both you, Donald, and Vinod, to please hold the phone a little closer. Some of our listeners are not able to hear your specific some words. So, yeah. So, Donald, can you you mentioned incentives, aligning incentives and processes. How important, or when during the value chain do you realize that you're up there, kind of thing?
Well, I think incentives become very important when you're moving into the contact center channels. Because in the contact center, typically you have staff who are motivated and KPI'd around things like service levels. So picking up the call quickly, handling the call in a short period of time. If suddenly you ask the agent to also deliver a cross-sell message, then that's going to extend the length of time their calls take, and it means they can handle less calls, which might be in conflict with their KPI. So it's all about reviewing, you know, how are these people incented to make sure you get the balance correct.
Okay, yeah. And again, so similar question following up to that. How do banks, for example, I'm sure OCBC, as you mentioned, had a specific history of how you chose specific channels based on your organizational makeup. But on what basis, once again, can banks look at in terms of what channel is the best? I presume branches for large branch-based organization would not necessarily be the easiest channel to implement on, not only because it involves a lot of training, but it involves a lot of offers and a lot of work at the front end.
True, but real-time is going to involve a lot of work at the front end, I think, regardless of which channel you look at. The reason we went with the branch is that we realized that the account opening experience was such a critical interaction and had such huge possibility that was the one that financially made the most sense for us to go for first. Also, from a people change point of view, our sales force are very, very skilled in selling and introducing products, and so they were comfortable with doing that type of thing. Whereas if we'd gone to the contact center first, you know, there's a big change mindset required there to get service staff to suddenly think about the selling side. So the way that we faced it was we went for the branch first because we could see the potential was there. You had people who were willing to sell and also had the tools to sell. We did internet second because internet, we had to do a large transformation anyway on the web UI, the web design. We had to wait for that project to complete before we then put in the real-time cross-sell element. And then contact center, frankly, there was too big an organizational change, and so we delayed that one. And secondly, we felt we had to get the service side correct to earn the right to sell, and so we're still working on getting the service right before we move there. So that's why we structured it, but every bank will be different.
Okay. I have a couple of questions from our listeners. First of all, if any of you can share some scoring metrics or indexes which are helpful in real time, anything that you, if you can, of course, that you think are helpful in managing real time marketing.
I couldn't understand the question.
Can you share some examples? Yeah, I think that it says, can you share some examples of scoring metrics or index which should be used in real time marketing? So if the questions are not clear, the person who's asked the question, can you please clarify on the chat again? The second question is, how does the analytics intelligence be transferred to the sales channel so that they can take up the best offer?
Certainly in OCBC's case, the way we transfer the offers to the front line is via the CRM platform, and so we deploy the leads via the CRM platform, and it captures data during the interaction. It links directly with our real-time marketing engine and does the scoring. The whole premise of R1 is that the person at the front line doesn't need to think. They don't need to think about analytics. They just have a customer in front of them. They're focused on giving that customer a good experience. They're capturing data during the interaction in the way they normally would. But the analytics engine is doing all the thinking for them. It's really up to the person at the front just to deliver that offer and make it compelling and relevant to the person in front of them. We don't really want the frontline guy thinking about analytics. He's thinking, OK, how do I best deliver this offer?
Cool. OK.
I think add to what Don said, I think it changes from channel. For example, in my experience in my days of working with HSBC, for call center example that Don said, depending on people who are incentivized and what they are geared to. When we have seen, for example, a channel is not working, very specifically a call center, so when we wanted to basically do the next best offer, we just took a different viewpoint to it. For example, if a customer is calling and I have scored him, and I know that he is probably falls in the top decile and he's high probable to take an insurance product, then it doesn't make sense to actually send to the normal queue, right? So then what we created essentially was what we called as like specialized sales teams, right, within a call center. So probably 10 people are selected and you cannot change the entire KPI for the call center, right? So you basically select 10 people, you train them for that particular specific product. So we use the call routing system to say if this person falls under a high probability to buy insurance, then route the call to these 10 folks, right? So these 10 folks are actually incentivized on that, whereas the rest of the 500 folks would have a different structure. So similar across, once you have built a cross-sell models for all the products, and if you have indexed them, and if you have a sequence in which the first product, second product, third product. So, and typically the bandwidth is also limited. So you typically choose probably, let's say, three or four top yielding products, and you create these teams which are incentivized and, basically can train to sell this product well. And I have seen it work well because you're not essentially trying to boil the ocean. You are actually taking a very methodical approach in terms of trying to see if it works, improve it, and then slowly keep adding, right? So there's one thing that I have seen work in terms of how you can integrate analytics to a couple of tough channels that you deal with within a bank.
Vinod, I want to quickly specifically ask a question for you in terms of what you have seen in the real-time marketing space in emerging markets, you know, markets like Indonesia, India, Philippines, where banks are probably just getting their act together in terms of putting a strong CRM system in place. Of course, they're nowhere close to topping out on outbound offers, as Donald just mentioned, as one critical criteria, probably one critical criteria for deciding on. What have you seen in terms of the uptake, and what challenges are you foreseeing in the near future for banks in these countries?
I think we get a lot of inquiries from banks in terms of they want to hear about this, so we go talk about it. Just to give you some kind of a metric, if more often than not when we go and speak to probably 10 of them, you would find 8 of them not having the basic infrastructure. For example, either they are in the journey of building a warehouse or they are trying to get their basic back-end stuff done. So this actually inhibits or even, you know, curtails the kind of benefits that you can get from the investment that you're going to do in the real-time marketing. So in my opinion, the basic infrastructure is what I have seen as a major, I would say, in terms of, let's say, issues that come up with a lot of these banks within the region trying to basically go down this path. So they can still go down the event base, right, campaign, but when it comes to real-time, is my back-end and my systems and my architecture, is it really actually optimized to do the real time? So that's where you hit the first stumbling block, and that's what they're all trying to, you know, overcome.
Donald, that takes me to the next question once again, which is in the journey towards becoming real-time marketing, maybe across one or multiple channels, Donald, what do you think are the key risks that a bank needs to keep in mind? Internal, organizational, technology, analytical, any sort. What do you think?
That's a difficult one. It's kind of hard for us to say because so far we've only got one channel up and running and the second one is coming soon. I will say one of the big challenges we had actually was with the product guys. Because one of the differences with the inbound and the outbound marketing is that the product guys have to effectively give up a lot of power and a lot of input when it comes to real-time marketing. Because effectively the engine is making the decisions for them. So the way we work at OCBC is effectively we've identified a number of segments. And for each of those segments, we've sat down and we've agreed, okay, if this segment of customers comes in, what is the product shelf going to be? What's the six or seven relevant offers? But we then leave it up to the engine and the decision rules effectively to say for this customer, based on their current circumstance, what's the best offer to make to them? And you'll find a lot of the product people have issues with that because you'll have the credit card team, for example, who are always, well, my product's the best product. It should be the one that comes first. But actually, the engine decides based on the current circumstance of that customer and their profile, actually, credit card isn't the best offer for them. Credit card's only the third best offer. And so we did have some challenges around that, just dealing with product people and trying to explain the concept that their offer can't always be first because it's not always the best offer for that customer. So it doesn't answer your question, but that's just one of the challenges that we came across.
Okay. Vinod, do you want to add anything to specific risks?
I didn't quite get that question, Arun. Can you please repeat it?
So one of the things that we came across in our survey was the fact that if it's not done well, it's real-time marketing can actually be a boon than a bane. So keeping that in mind, what do you think are the key risks that are... that a bank should keep in mind while even thinking about real-time marketing?
I think Don touched upon it, right? So if you're still basically focused on the product push kind of an approach and the flavor of the month kind of an approach in most of your channels, then any kind of an effort down the real-time is not going to help. So the relevancy becomes very important, and if that's not kept in mind in any of these, it's not really going to give you the returns that you want. So that would be, I would say, the biggest risk, because the system works in terms of, you know, this is what I want to push, because there are a lot of other external factors that can come into play. So interest rates go down, then I want to push some of the product. My interest rate goes up, then I want to push some of the product. So you can try to build this in, but at the end of the day, it has to be relevant to the customer. So if it's going to be a product push-focused approach, it's not going to work. It would be very risky to go down if you cannot make the change management happen.
I think I actually understand the question now. And some risks that I would see would be, for example, in the contact center, it's all about earning the right to make that offer. You know, if the customer has called you and they've asked for a fee waiver and you've rejected them, the customer is not going to have a very good experience. And if you then, at the end of that call, turn around and say, hey, do you want to buy a unit trust, then it's just going to be disrespectful to the customer. So it's all about earning the right to make the offer. I think another point to consider also, another risk, would be around service levels, again, in contact center. You can't tag a cross-sell offer onto every single call because it's going to extend the length of those calls significantly. So if you look at your call queues and you see you have 100 people waiting in the queue, I would be suppressing my marketing offers at that point so that the customer experience doesn't degrade too much. So it's about respecting your customers first and then putting the cross-sell offers second rather than the other way around, I think.
Great. Exactly. Perfect. That actually answers my question well. I have two last questions, one from our audience. The question is, keeping the objective of minimum investment and quick ROI for a bank which has not embraced real-time marketing yet, how much investment and what technology is required? Either of you? And then Vinod, how much investment and what technology?
That's a very difficult question. I'm just thinking how to answer.
Well, why you take it?
IBM.
So I
kidding.
I mean, okay, go ahead. So you were asking something else.
Yeah. So while you're thinking about, of course, this question is of course dependent on the kind of bank that you. It's a custom. It's specific to a bank. But even while you're thinking about the question, my last question is in terms of course the one big channel that banks are still trying to master is social media. How does real-time marketing play into your Donald, your plans for social media in the future?
That's interesting. Real-time marketing for us is automated. It's all about who is this customer, what are they doing right now, how does that relate to what they've done in the past and coming up with a relevant offer. We also scan the social media in real-time as well, but it's far more human than automated. You know, the Brandtology tools, for example, they allow us to see what customers are saying about us and to reach out to those individuals and respond to them. But we have a human there that's interacting with them rather than a real-time engine. And so at the moment, those are the kind of separations for us. Our social media is far more one-to-one almost and human-orientated, whereas the real-time marketing is far more automated and machine-driven.
And you don't expect these to converge in the near future?
Certainly, I'd love to have the social data and their sentiment coming into the warehouse as well so that I can use it as an input into the real-time decisioning. It's a fair bit away, I think, for us. There are other areas that we'd like to tackle first before we get to that.
Okay, fair. Vinod, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, let me try to answer it, right? I'm not taking very specifically, irrespective of whichever platform that you choose, whichever technology that you're going, I think if you're going to basically do on the basic components, right, of a real-time marketing, if you're looking at the basic component that actually can integrate to channels and can actually, stream offers, you would have a wide range in most of the places. It can range anywhere from $300,000 to almost close to more than $500,000 as a technology component, right? But one of the key things that you need to keep in mind, as I said, basic stuff, right? How do I manage my offers? Am I already doing my normal alignments around my marketing collateral? So those systems will add on to it. So in terms of a total cost of ownership, will be almost close to three times your investment in the technology from putting your people, putting everything together. So that's the kind of numbers that you should have in mind. So if you're investing in X amount, you should always think that I'm going to spend at least a minimum of 2x of that getting it executed right. So that would be a benchmark, so that you should go with.
My point of view on that is that really the cost depends on what you already have in-house. You know, a lot of the cost is associated with getting the data in place. And so if you haven't already got the data in place for your proactive outbound stuff, then that's really where your cost is going to be. For us, the cost of inbound wasn't really that much. We already had a great data warehouse. We already had the full Unica suite for the proactive outbound. And it was just a case of adding an additional module which integrated with that to allow us to do the real-time inbound. There is some cost, obviously, in integrating with the front channels. But most of these channels these days are SOA-enabled, and so the cost is much, much reduced. So to us, it wasn't a huge additional cost because all of the fundamentals were in place. That's really where your cost is going to be. And I think someone asked the question earlier on, which platform do we use? We use Unica, which is now owned by IBM.
Perfect. Let's proceed. I think, go. Any last comments, Vinod or Donald?
No, I have nothing else to add.
We've had a fruitful 1 hour. Most of our questions have been answered. And thank you once again to both of you for your time, and thank you to the listeners for listening in. Just to let you know, the Asian Banker will summarize the discussion in the form of proceedings report and put it up online the next couple of days. Any additional information that you want in the next few days, if you want, please ask us. We will be happy to share that with you. To remind you, this discussion will go on further, of course, on our data analytics working group, of which, as I mentioned, Donald is an advisor to us. And we will be talking a lot more about this in much more detail during our Data World conference in September, in October. You'll get the information on that from our website. Thank you once again. Thank you, Vinod. Thank you, Donald, for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. We look forward to having you in our next teleconsultation sessions again. Thank you once again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.